number 27602, proposal would be Better Hearing Employee LLC. Arguing for the petitioner, Joe Moss. Arguing for the respondent, Michelle Wu. Arguing on the merits.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Associate Justices. This is Thanksgiving time, and the first thing I'm thankful for is that an ordinary citizen with a case with not much controversy has access to justice and access to the highest justice in the state, and I thank you for taking this case. The first point I want to get into is that this is a remedial statute, and I mentioned that in page 5 of my answering brief that it was a remedial statute, but reading the ICA's opinion, there's no evidence that they construed it as a remedial statute. And this court in Kalima versus State, which all the justices except Mr. Kovac participated in 2006, said a remedial statute is a statute that provides a remedy or facilitates an already existing remedy. This act provides a warranty, and it also provides things that can happen if the warranty isn't fulfilled. So I submit that it's clearly a remedial act. So what happens if you believe that it's a remedial act? Well, they're to be liberally construed to suppress the perceived evil and advance the remedy. And narrower interpretations are disfavored. And an interpretation that impedes rather than advances the remedies is disfavored. That's also Kalima versus State and HCSCU versus PACOM. So I think that's the starting point. We've got a remedial statute here that's to be liberally interpreted, liberally construed. And we don't have any case law on this, so I'll spend quite a bit of time talking about the statute and how you might liberally construe it. And this also reviewed de novo, as I'm sure you know. Kalima also said that in Malello. So, the first starting point, I think, is what is a nonconformity under the statute? And when you look at the definitions, nonconformity, it's interesting because it says a defect, malfunction, or condition that does not conform to any warranty applicable. The word condition jumped out at me the last time I read it because it doesn't have, the product doesn't have to be defective. It doesn't have to be malfunctioning. There just has to be a condition that makes it where it doesn't conform to any applicable warranty. Then when you look at the 481K2, what is the warranty? And this warranty is, if they don't get it, the statute says you are getting it. You have to get it. And the warranty is that it's fit for the ordinary purposes for which the device is used. Okay. So that's the starting point. If it's just a condition that makes it where it's not fit for its ordinary purposes, then it's a nonconformity. Now, the ICA, I submit for your consideration, erred when it found that a person using a hearing aid that can't hear the people talking at their table, that hearing aid is still fit for its ordinary purpose. And it specifically found that, just to briefly review, he got the hearing aids, he took them back 4 or 5 times for the same condition. Sometimes he couldn't hear things close, sometimes he couldn't hear things far away. About 4 or 5 times for that condition, never improved. Then he took it back one more time because he was hearing clicking sounds. They sent it back to the manufacturer, replaced some things inside, the microphone, the amplifier, and then he got it back. Then he went, after May 2004, to a class reunion. And at the class reunion, he testified that I couldn't hear the people, I couldn't converse with the people at the table where I was sitting. I could hear the noises far away. Now, the ICA says there was no evidence that the device was defective, malfunctioning, or unfit for its ordinary purpose after that repair. So what they're saying is that if you have a hearing aid and you can't hear the people you're sitting around the table with, it's still fit for its ordinary purpose. I submit that anybody that a hearing aid, the purpose of a hearing aid is to hear. People buy hearing aids so they can communicate with their loved ones, their friends, people when they're going to shops or whatever. The reason you have a hearing aid is to hear, so you can communicate with your family. People generally don't buy hearing aids because they can't hear birds at a distance. They want to be able to converse with their their child with friends, their classmates, with their spouse. That's the purpose of a hearing aid. And when you can't hear people at a table around you, it's not fit for its ordinary purpose. And their reasoning was, the ICA, as near as I can tell, well, you could hear something far away, so therefore the hearing aid was working. It just needed to be adjusted. He could hear something far away, so it was working properly, it just needed to be adjusted. Well, that's a slippery slope, because when you think about it, if only standard that a hearing aid has to have is that you could hear something, then the only possible device you could sell that would be non-conforming would be a noise-canceling device. I mean, as long as you could hear something, the ICA says just go back for adjustment. Go back if you can hear anything. So only if you could hear nothing would they say it's not working. You could literally sell somebody something the size of a hearing aid that was totally empty with a little knob on it. I'm not saying they did that, obviously, but the product could be that bad. And the ICA just says, you hear anything, then you go back and back and back. So I think that's the first thing that you justices need to decide is was this device fit for its ordinary purpose? When you can't hear people at the table with you, when, as he testified four or five times, he couldn't hear things close up or he couldn't hear far away, was it fit for its ordinary purpose? Now, if it's not fit for its ordinary purpose, due to any condition, then it's a nonconformity. Okay, what happens when we have a nonconformity? Well, the statute says he returns it to the manufacturer or any agent for repair. And then it's presumed, after they've had two attempts to repair, that he can return it and get his money back. And in addition, just as a further note, in regards to whether or not it was working, whether it was fit for its ordinary purpose, we had an evidence, a letter from their own employee, Eric Hader, who did the adjustments. And she said that she was very frustrated and felt helpless, was not providing him the service that he needed. And it was her goal to help those who are seeking help with their hearing. So ICA did was they said that, and I don't agree with this, but they said the testimony was that the ordinary purpose of a hearing aid is to provide amplification. And therefore, if it provides amplification, then it's working. And first of all, I think that misstated the testimony of Mr. Willard. He was never asked the question, what is the ordinary purpose of a hearing aid? What he did testify to was he was asked, what do you do when somebody comes in for a hearing aid? Well, you measure, you make a mold of their ear. You run them through tests to see what frequencies need to be amplified, whether it's straight across the board or certain ones need more amplification than another. There's a discrimination test because if people lose their hearing for long enough, they lose the ability to recognize sounds. And then they also talk to them about what kind of activities they do in life. Somebody that works in an airport and somebody that works in an office would have a different thing. So this oversimplifies the purpose of the hearing aid. When you set their definition that all the ordinary purpose is to amplify sound, then they're looking at it from the business's point of view of how you accomplish the goal, helping the person hear. But what the statute talks about is the goal itself. That it defines an assistive device as something that helps people with hearing, not something that helps amplify sound.
So the nature of hearing loss?
I don't know that. That didn't come out in the testimony. It was just that
the tested for hearing loss and there was no evidence as to where it could tell.
There was no evidence, that's correct. The only evidence is he bought the second best hearing aid he could buy and then he came back four or five times, like I said, because he could sometimes hear close up and sometimes hear far away. And then the last time he came back, he couldn't hear things as fractured. But the evidence was that they put him through the testing, and I'm sure they fitted him in with what they thought would be the best hearing aid for him.
This was the second best.
Right. price. As I recall the testimony, I think there was five models that Mr. Wither described, and that he picked the number two model. So the five available, he picked the number
two. Mr. Moss, there was apparently a test to see whether or not a referral had to be made for medical purposes. That's right.
I don't recall that, Mr. Justice. Probably was, but I don't recall that in the testimony.
And that was the testimony about the ordinary, I guess, procedure they go through in getting a person for doing that.
That would be where it was, but I honestly don't recall it. That would make sense, though. Back to the goal is more than just amplifying sound. Because if it was just amplifying sound, you think of like an ambulance. An ambulance has a high-pitched frequency. And if you hear an ambulance, you want to hear it as soon as possible. You don't want to hear it half a block away. You want to hear it two or three or four or five blocks away. You also want to know whether it's behind you or to the side so you can do what's necessary. So for that sound, you want it amplified. But then what happens when the ambulance drives right next to you, 10 feet away? You don't want it amplified. So a hearing aid is more than just something that amplifies sound indiscriminately. And I think that the ICA, when it said that its ordinary function was just to amplify sound, and therefore these hearing aids were working, that was an error. But first of all, the statute measures it by results, helping people hear. And that a hearing aid does more than just amplify sound. The other thing that the ICA mentioned in their ruling, and that they missed, and that I missed until just recently, and I think everybody has missed, is that when you read the Act, it talks about that when a consumer returns the device, that they in writing, they give written notice of the nonconformity. That kind of puzzled me at the start, because what consumer knows to give written notice of a nonconformity? You buy something, you go tell them what's wrong, that's that. And part of their decision was, well, there's no nonconformity because he never gave written notice of a nonconformity. Then I was reading it closely again and got to section G of 482 and noticed that it said that the written warranty shall be a full warranty as described in the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. Okay, it's supposed to be a full warranty like the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act at 15 U.S.C. 2301. Well, you look at that and it says, well, Section 2302 talks about what's supposed to be in the warranties. Identification of the names and address of the warranters, the statement of what the consumer must do, step-by-step procedure that the consumer should take to obtain performance of any obligation under the warranty, and a brief general description of the legal remedies available to the consumer. So our legislature passed a very broad law, and I think we were kind of thrown off. We just thought, well, the warranty the legislature gave was just that it would be 1 year fit for the ordinary purposes. But they also said it's got to conform to the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. And the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, then that cures the problem of the person getting the notice, because they're supposed to tell the consumer, here's what you need to do, kind of like the used car law. You need to tell the consumer, you need to give written notice. So now that makes sense. They know what to do. So they weren't given this warranty. The owner testified he had never heard of the Act before, and they gave the warranty that they always been giving. It didn't tell Mr. Raposo what he needed to do or what his legal remedies are. So I think that based on that, his failure to give the written warranty or written notice of the nonconformity is of no effect.
Well, there was the letter by the petitioner's wife to the respondent, indicating that there were problems, and then she
That's correct.
So that is a written notice making reference to adjustments that have been worked.
That is correct. So we do have that. And that's a good point. I don't even think we need that because we weren't told that we needed to do that, but she did give written notice. And there doesn't seem to be any question but what they knew that what the problem was that needed to be corrected.
Well, the ICA raised that, but that wasn't raised on appeal, was it?
I don't think that it was.
So the ICA raised that sua sponte?
They raised it sua sponte. It was part of their reasoning. I don't know that it was the defining thing in their reasoning. I think from my take on the reasoning, they just basically thought that that the device wasn't unfit for its ordinary purpose because it amplified sound and just needed adjustment after adjustment after adjustment. So once you take that as the premise, that it's fit for its ordinary purpose, then I'm stumped. If you agree with that, that if the hearing aid, or you're sitting around the table with somebody and you can't hear what they say, that that's fit for its ordinary purpose. If you agree with that, then I lose, no doubt. I have a hard time believing that hearing aid where you can't hear people sitting around a table is fit. I don't know why else what you would buy a hearing aid for, but it isn't to hear people talking to you. There's one other thing that may or may not concern you, but it's kind of tugs at the equitable nature of the case, and that's that the ICA talks several times about, well, they told Mr. Raposo that he would need adjustments, that he was told that he would need to come in three or four times to adjust these hearing aids, and he agreed to that. He knew what the deal was. Okay. The problem is that 481K of the statute, 481K5B, says that any agreement entered into by a consumer for the purchase or lease of an assistive device that waives, limits, or disclaims any of the rights set forth in this chapter shall be void as contrary to public policy. Any agreement that waives, limits, or disclaims any of the remedies, any of the rights, is void as public policy. So the fact that they said to him, oh, it's going to take three or four tries, that doesn't count. They don't get to do that. That's void as a public policy. You can't tell the consumer that you have to give us three or four tries. Now, I think that the whole problem, and maybe what the ICA was thinking, was this is a very broad remedial statute. And when you start really reading it, and it talks about any condition that makes it unfit for its own purpose, and as broad and as remedial and liberal as this language is, I think the ICA kind of thought, oh, this is hard on this hearing aid situation. They should be given more than two tries. But my point in this is the remedy is not with the court. The remedy is with the legislature. And there is a bit of precedent for industries being able to go to the legislature and being deregulated, have the regulations eased. We've seen that. And that's what I'm saying is that the legislature clearly put hearing aids into this statute, and it's a very, very liberal remedial statute. And that we don't get to, well, I submit that the proper interpretation is not to narrowly construe this so as to basically defeat any remedy for a person buying a hearing aid, but to do what the legislature said. And I think that is really the main thing that is better hearing's problem.
The court made a finding about reasonable opportunity to catch. There are two findings with respect to that. Finding 42, which is a general statement. And prior to that, there was a statement that there were, I think, manufacturers who assumed to have a reasonable opportunity to repair with two attempts. But the presumption in and of itself is not a limitation on what the court can find. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I believe that was not clearly erroneous that they had the opportunities to repair. It was returned.
That finding refers to prior to and after.
Right. Okay. Right. The four or five times it was returned, and then after it came back from the manufacturer. And
excuse me, just one more issue with the ICA raised the question of whether or not the respondent was a manufacturer. And said it didn't reach that issue because it wasn't raised. But what's your response?
That it's not a mutually exclusive definition, and this was briefed in the trial court. When you look at the definition of manufacturer, it includes an importer, a distributor, a factory branch, distributor branch, a warranter, but does not include an assistive device dealer, which is, and the assistive device dealer is defined as somebody that just sells, who's in the business of selling assistive devices. Now, it could not be, it has to be mutually exclusive because of this. A manufacturer that operates through a factory branch, Starkey Labs, operating through a factory branch, would be an assistive device dealer. It would be in its factory branch in the business of selling assistive devices. And yet, if you interpreted it as mutually exclusive, then a manufacturer who was operating as a factory branch couldn't be sued because it's an assistive device dealer. So the term manufacturer, I think that if an assistive device dealer just sticks to the business of selling assistive devices, they're safe. Once they start being an agent and a warrantor for the manufacturer, then they fit the definition of manufacturer. Now, I think that perhaps this statute would be, that situation could arise, say, in Maine, if you were business in California close to where Starkey Labs is, you could be just purely in the business of selling these things. And then if somebody had a problem, you would refer them straight to Starkey Labs. And then you would be strictly an assistive device dealer. But once you start being their agent, and once you start being their warrantor, and in this particular case, we have no address for Starkey. The only address given was for Better Hearing. There was no, every contact was made through Better Hearing. So for them to say, oh, now you have to go to Starkey, who doesn't have any, you know, is not on the main, and not even here in Hawaii, then I don't think that's right. I think that this definition of manufacturer is if somebody's an agent, then they're a manufacturer. If they're a warranter, they're a manufacturer. And you can be both a manufacturer and an assistive device dealer. Obviously, because you can be a manufacturer and sell through a factory branch. You can do both things. I'm through. I'll save some time for rebuttal if needs be. Are there any more questions?
My name is Chief Justice and Associate Justice. It is quite an honor to appear before you this morning. This is a very important statute which does have ramifications in this industry with regard to how it is interpreted, how it is enforced in particular. This case, the facts, the relevant facts for purposes of the appeal are undisputed. Mr. Raposo bought two hearing aids in February of 2004. These are digital devices, meaning that they contain computer chips, which are modified for amplification based on the user's needs. They are assistive devices. They do not replace hearing, nor are they meant to replace hearing. Just as any other assistive device, such as a walking cane or an artificial limb, these do not substitute for the human ear or the human leg. They are meant to make life better by improving the ability of the human being to the extent that that is technologically possible. With regard to hearing, the only technology that we have available to us are analog hearing aids and the preferred digital hearing aids. Digital hearing aids, by definition, amplifies them. Justice Lacoba had indicated earlier that there had been a test at the outset which was done by Better Hearing. That is true, and that is attested to in the transcript, which is before this court on the record. So Woodard testified at that time that during the first initial visit, the first thing which is done is essentially a video scope of the ear canal to make sure that there are no indications of cysts or other problems which would require a medical referral. The healer does not try to diagnose hearing loss or remedy hearing loss. The only thing that the dealer is doing is providing hearing aids to amplify sound and again to make life better. The process that one goes through, which is also reviewed in depth with a potential customer before purchasing the hearing aids, is to explain to the customer what reasonable expectations are. This was discussed throughout the trial. Mr. Woodard testified that depending upon the person's hearing loss, amplification may be great. You may see some improvement, 70-80%. And in other cases, perhaps not so great. Those cases, for example, are where the discrimination test shows that a person who has had hearing loss over a prolonged period of time has lost the ability to discriminate sounds such as the letter T or the letter R, making it more difficult, even with amplification, to identify certain words. Hearing is composed of high frequency, low frequency. So when you adjust the hearing aid, which is done with computer software, and these occur after the hearing aids have been fitted, and one then goes back to the dealership, sits down, and reports what their findings are, having used the hearing aid, whether they can hear sounds far away, whether they can hear sounds close up. In what kind of environments would they typically require the hearing aid to function? If they are in social events, by and large, then they would want to be able to discriminate between conversations that they're having up close and sounds that they hear in the ambient environment. So again, hearing aids by definition are nothing more than assistive devices and they amplify sound. The ICA correctly defined the ordinary purpose for hearing aids to be amplification of sound. That's at page 14 of the court's opinion. This, in fact, was attested to by Mr. Woodard in his testimony, and that's found at page 27 of the transcript, which is on the record. And Mr. Woodard explains at that point that what we are doing, explained to the customer, is amplifying sound, and that this process will require, on average, at least 3 to 4 adjustments. So you come in, you report, you give us feedback, what you're hearing, what you're not hearing, and we digitally adjust the hearing aid to assist you in better hearing in your environment. So in this case, Justices, what we have are various issues that come through the facts of this case. Mr. Raposa received his hearing aids. He went through the process of adjustments, 4 to 5 adjustments. During this time, there was no report by him, no complaint by him, that the hearing aids were not performing. It was not until several months after he received the hearing aids he began to hear clicking noises that he turned and reported this problem. Obviously, at this point, the clicking noises were creating a problem which required care. Mr. Woodard testified that normally, particularly where you have both hearing aids with the same problem occurring at the same time, and in this case, a clicking noise, that indicates misuse by the customer or the owner. Typically, that happens where the computer chips are exposed to water. Mr. Raposa may have forgotten to take off his hearing aids when he went in the shower, or he took them out if it's possible. I think Mr. Woodard testified that a dog can get hold of them, or there's some other misuse which causes that clicking noise. You would not expect that to happen on its own, but rather through misuse. And under the nonconformity definition that's found in this statute, misuse by a customer does not equate to a nonconformity. So in May of 2004, we have this report of the clicking noises, and in fact, Better Hearing, without question, takes these ships them to Starkey, the manufacturer, Starkey, at its cost, completely replaces it.
You said it was surmised that misuse was the reason for the people.
That was Mr. Woodard's testimony.
Didn't he also say something about the divinity?
I don't recall that, Chief Justice. But it is true that water or moisture could result in problems.
There's no humidity, it's not misuse.
Well, I don't believe there was any testimony that general humidity that would normally be found in an environment.
How long can better hearing been in business?
I don't believe that there's any evidence of that on the record. It had been in business for several years that I'm aware of, but that is not on the record. Now, that was not an issue that was focused upon at the trial level. As Mr. Woodard did testify, Starkey has a standard 30-day money-back guarantee. And the purpose of that, no questions asked, the purpose of that is to ensure that once someone who purchases digital hearing aids receives them, even though they've gone through all this testing, and they, within that 30-day period, hopefully have completed at least some adjustments, have determined that this product is just not going to help them to the degree that they had hoped, they can return the hearing aids without cost. Even though these are customized pieces, they can be returned without cost. And that's what that 30-day warranty, if you will, is for. As the court knows, there are additional warranties that were provided in this case which go far beyond the requirements of Chapter 41K. There was a one-year warranty which allowed, as it did in this case, for the complete replacement of the devices, even if the devices required repair because of misuse. In addition to that, there was a lifetime service guarantee provided by Better Hearing, such that any time the user required adjustment, particularly if his hearing was changing as he aged, and that was the beauty of digital hearing aids, those hearing aids could then be adjusted to accommodate his changes in the quality of his natural hearing. So those warranties clearly fall within and go beyond the requirements of Chapter 41K. We do take issue with the ICA's opinion that the letter of the statute concerning the warranty was not provided for. In this case, they cite that there has to be a warranty for intended fitness of use. The statute does not require that specific language be contained in any written warranty. Substantively, it requires, obviously, that there is a warranty for fitness. And in this case, such a warranty was provided for. I noticed that counsel, in addressing the term nonconformity, indicated that it is a condition that fails. Failure is a key word, because if we look at the warranty that is found in the record, it clearly says that Starkey will repair or replace the hearing aids for any failure. So we're looking at the same language. And by that language, they are providing a warranty for their product for ordinary use. Again, this is an application device. It is not meant to be a magic pill. It is not meant to replace one's natural hearing.
The statute indicates enhanced hearing.
I'm sorry, just
enhanced hearing.
Yes.
It enhances hearing.
Yes.
If a person comes in and they can hear bells, you know, just sound, but you can't hear words, does that have enhanced hearing where you can hear bells and sirens, but you can't hear words?
The statute does not address what's meant by that term.
What do you think enhanced hearing means?
Your Honor, I would suggest that the term means to enhance one's ability to hear conversation.
Right. So when you say amplification of sound,
distinction, but I don't believe that it's inconsistent. The process that one goes through in this case is to determine if they are an appropriate candidate to begin with for a digital hearing aid. And they go through, among other tests, the differential test to see if they can distinguish between different counties. That test is meant to determine your ability to interpret the amplification. And although you cannot hear certain letters, perhaps, or your brain is no longer able to distinguish those particular sounds, it does not equate to not being able to communicate or not being able to better hear communication. A person would still
distinguish what a word is meaning. It only be your sound. You're seeing that.
I'm suggesting that the screening process, which is initially completed with the customer, determines this very issue, whether or not the digital hearing devices will enhance sound and therefore the ability to communicate.
So I asked you so much, what was the nature of the loss of hearing of this particular person? He said he didn't understand what the diagnosis was.
There is no clear indication on the record concerning the nature or extent of his loss, other than the testimony concerning his ability to hear far away or to hear close. He had difficulties in certain circumstances, such as at his reunion, where the ambient sound was loud to hear persons that he was speaking up close.
So if a person were to come in, initially with the first 30 days, if he can say, I can't make up his word, I can't hear, I can't hear far away, but close, I can't make the opposition of the table, and he goes on and on, and that would be disgusting. In that situation, you say he's working.
No, we don't, Your Honor. In that circumstance, we would likely indicate to the person that perhaps the digital hearing aids are not suitable. That's the purpose of that 30-day satisfaction.
But it has to be within 30 days, despite the fact that he can go back more investment beyond 30 days.
According to Mr. Woodard, the expectation in the normal process is that a number of adjustments will have already occurred within that 30-day period. In this case, those adjustments did occur. There was no problem with Mr. Raposa's ability to use the hearing aids up until May, when these clicking noises began. And this was something that was repaired. This was not a non-conformity, however, but it was repaired because of the one-year warranty provided for by Starkey. After it was repaired, there was no indication that the devices were not functional. In fact, his account of the reunion event indicates that, in fact, the hearing aids were working. There's no evidence, contrary to what the trial court found, that the clicking noises persisted after these units were replaced. It's not my estimate.
So again, when you said they were working at the reunion, what you mean is he was hearing sound. You couldn't make out conversation.
I don't think his testimony was that he could not hear communication. His testimony was that he could hear people speaking further away. And had difficulty. Right. Had difficulty. Was not unable, but had difficulty hearing those who were close to him. And again, that would be expected with digital hearing aids. That essentially he was given new hearing aids in the middle part of May 2004. Had one adjustment. So you would expect that to be the case. That he would need to come in and report, provide feedback to better hearing as to what his issues were. Wanted to primarily go far away or primarily close up and make those adjustments. Again, that is the normal process for hearing aids. these adjustments are a part of the ordinary process. To find, as the petitioner would urge this court, that an adjustment is a defect and a nonconformity would be an error, we believe. But the hearing aids have to function in that regard. If you have an artificial limb, particularly a sophisticated one, you're not going to be able to buy that off the shelf. It's the same reason that you don't buy a hearing aid off the shelf. Those require adjustments based on that particular person's needs and abilities.
Counsel, do you agree that Better Homes was a warranter or Starkey?
Your Honor, if you're addressing the manufacturer issue, and I thank you for that because I did want to address that. Better Hearing, under the three warranties that are provided, does indicate that for minor repairs that can be done in-house, those will be done by Better Hearing. And so arguably, the warranty or guarantee that's provided by Better Hearing would fall within, as Mr. Ross suggests, an agency type of situation. The reason that the manufacturer issue was not addressed on appeal and was not raised in the opening brief is because of the standard that's imposed on us, which is clearly erroneous. If you look at that particular provision, we believe it is problematic. It is unclear whether or not accepting a dealer means categorically accepting a dealer, even if the dealer is operating in the capacity as an agent which provides a warranty. So because of that, we did not feel it would be appropriate, given the standard of clear error, to raise that particular issue, nor did we feel it was necessary, given the other material issues that have been presented at both the trial level and on appeal. And those had to deal with the definition of nonconformity for the May 2004 event.
The court did not find that there was misuse.
The court did not specifically address misuse. The court did find that there had been testimony, Mr. Woodard's testimony, that the circumstance which presented in May of 2004 was typical and indicative of misuse.
But based on Mr. Woodard's testimony, I suppose. But the court did not find that there was misuse by the petitioner.
The court did not find that specifically.
And the only evidence of misuse was Mr. Woodward's opinion about why these devices are not working.
That's true, Your Honor. Even if, Your Honor, the condition of the hearing aids in May of 2004 could have been attributed to some type of defect, which would bring it within the term of nonconformity, still, we do not have any evidence that Better Hearing failed to comply with 481K3, because even if you have a nonconformity, Better Hearing was given the opportunity by statute to repair it, and only the remedy is only present for Mr. Raposo if there is an effort to repair it twice with failure, or the time within which the repair takes place, that the hearing aids are out of Mr. Raposo's possession and in the possession of the manufacturer, exceeds 30 business days. Those conditions were not met.
Those are presumptions built into the statute.
Those are specific requirements of the statute in order to trigger a remedy.
They are not, it's not necessary for the court or, I guess, the petitioner to rely on those presumptions, the 30-day and what is it? I forget what the other one was.
The two repairs.
Yeah. So the court could find this based on the totality of the circumstances, that there was a reasonable opportunity to repair.
That there was a reasonable opportunity to repair? No, I don't believe that's correct. I believe that the court is bound by the letter of the statute, because the statute provides for the remedy that's being sought. So in order for the remedy to be triggered, the criteria for determination of a violation must be met, and that criteria is very specific. I would also note, Your Honor, that with regard to the Chapter 480 claim that's been mentioned, The complaint does not allege a Chapter 480 claim. The 480 claim was not argued at the trial level, and nor was it brief. It is something that is newly added in the petition for writ of certiorari.
What did he receive the variance?
The testimony is that he received them in May of 2004, and that the first adjustment that he made thereafter likely occurred in
May. Basing off certain parts of it, Starkey?
Starkey.
Was it new hearing? You stated new hearing.
They essentially
replaced the microphone
and the receivers, and those are the internal components of the hearing.
That's what I meant by new hearing.
Yes. The only difference, Chief Justice, is that they were housed in the molds, the customized molds that have been made for Mr. Williams. But essentially, yes, they were new hearings.
Counsel, just to clarify,
481K-3A says, if the manufacturer's agents fail to correct a nonconformity as required by the warranty, after a reasonable opportunity to repair, the manufacturer shall accept return, etc., and refund. And subsection 3 of that section says, it shall be presumed that a manufacturer has had, quote, a reasonable opportunity to repair, close quotes. If the manufacturer or its agents fails to repair the same nonconformity within two attempts, or the assistive device is out of service, including by reason of attempts to repair one or more nonconformities for a cumulative total of more than 30 business days. So those requirements we refer to are presumptions in this statute.
Yes, that's correct.
So that the court is not limited to only the presumptions as listed in the statute.
Generally speaking, that's correct. For purposes of the appeal, because the trial judge focused on these requirements, we believe that this court is bound
by them. I made two findings. One, that there were two attempts, and second, that there was a reasonable opportunity to repair the hearing prior to and after requesting a refund.
Yes. And perhaps more importantly, there was only one quote-unquote repair in this case, and that arose from the complaints in May of 2004. And they were repaired. There's no evidence after the new hearing aids were provided to Mr. Raposo that there was any continued failure.
But the class review was after the repair for the prison itself.
That's right.
The notes during adjustment.
Are you speaking of the initial 4 to 5 adjustments, or is it the Mr. Raposo? There's no such testimony, and Tara was not able to testify because, as we know from the record, she had moved to the mainland, was no longer employed by the company, therefore was out of the jurisdiction. The testimony, however, Mr. Raposo, is that when these adjustments were made, he would go into a closed environment, which had the computer and the software required for the adjustment, and that he would report during this process whether hearing was improved or not improved based upon digital adjustments that were being made. He also testified that during this process, he could hear fine while he was in that environment. It was after he left that he noted that there were problems depending on his environment. And that, again, is the purpose of the adjustments. It requires feedback. Justices, I believe I've covered all the points that I intended to. Are there any further questions that I can address? Thank you very much.
Six minutes. Thank you. Just a couple of things. I think Mr. Chief Justice had a line of questions about the initial time when they went in for repairs or the correct, for the adjustments, they call it, and counsel admitted that that was the inmates were not working. And the statute provides for a one-year warranty, not a 30-day warranty. So I believe that when they kept coming in, when the person, he couldn't hear and he came in for adjustments, that's because the hearing aids weren't working. And they don't get to have just a 30-day warranty. The statute gives a one-year warranty.
Do you agree that when he came in for adjustments and whatever he was described as an enclosure,
I don't remember that testimony, and I've reviewed my statement of facts and my answering brief, and I don't recall that testimony, and I don't recall any testimony as a matter of fact how quickly, because all the adjustments were done by Ms. Kadar, who was not present. She was on the mainland, so there could have been no evidence about what was happening during those adjustments, because she was the only person who could have given that evidence. Mr. Raposo testified, and I believe that his testimony was, if anything, just to do with the initial fitting. I don't recall, and I just don't recall. I don't know if he testified. I don't believe so. If he could hear when he was in the chamber, whether he could or not, I don't think is necessarily relevant to whether it's fit for its ordinary purpose, which, as Your Honor correctly pointed out, the purpose is to enhance hearing. That's what the statute talks about. And amplifying sound is the means by which it enables a person to hear. And as I put in my writ, if that's all it is, then they should call it better sound amplification. Why? Not better hearing, because if all they're promising is sound amplification, then they should say so.
What's the difference between analog hearing and digital hearing?
That wasn't in the testimony, and I don't know. I'm not a very good guy. What I do know is that if the purpose is just to amplify sounds, then that's a hearing aid, because that amplifies sounds. I now have a one-year warranty on my television because it amplifies sounds. That's what my father used for a hearing aid for years and years, was the television at full volume. I'm a hearing aid. I had a client in 88 years old just last week, and I had to talk louder so I could get the information for her will. So if amplifying sound is all that you're doing, then a TV, a radio, an iPod, those are all hearing aids by their definition. It's more than just amplifying sound. It's amplifying sound in such a way that the person can hear. And the legislature talks about enhancing hearing, assisting people with hearing, not assisting people with amplifying sound. They're results-oriented, and they're oriented toward the consumer wants. And again, back to this liberal construction. They should talk about reasonable expectations, and they create reasonable expectations of with the person when they're sitting down to buy it. Again, 481K5 says you don't get to create expectations that are not in the statute. The statute says what they have to do. They talk about adjustments, and I think that's kind of a straw man, the adjustment thing. And I did look up, and I know that the court many times goes to Webster's Third New International Dictionary, and adjust is to bring to a more satisfactory state, to bring to a true or effective relative position. When you adjust something, that presupposes that it's working, and you're bringing it to a more satisfactory state. When they say we're adjusting the hearing aids, well, the hearing aids weren't working. So it's more than just an adjustment. Here's what an adjustment is. I go see the eye doctor, and my prescription doesn't change very much, but I go see the eye doctor, and then I like to stop, even if I don't need new glasses, if they're area where the technicians are, they take my glasses and they say, oh, you're not supposed to take them off like that, right? And then they'll go, they'll twist this, they'll twist that, they'll move this, they'll put it back on, and I go, oh, that feels good. That's the way it's supposed to feel. That's an adjustment. My glasses were working before. I could see just fine. They put it into a more effective and satisfactory state. So by them saying, all we're doing is adjustments, it's not repairs, I don't think that's correct. I think that they are, that the hearing aids weren't working, the person wasn't hearing what they were supposed to be hearing, and they just calling it an adjustment to evade the statute is not right. And the statute, K3, talks about that a person shall, that they're, if they fail to correct a nonconformity after a reasonable opportunity to repair, when they brought it back 5 or 6 times total, 4 or 5, and then once more, that gave them the opportunity to repair. If they want to adjust and call it adjustment versus repair, I don't think it matters. All the consumer has to do is bring it back to them and give them the chance to correct the nonconformity. And again, if you think that being able to hear somebody speaking and sitting at the table with you is nonconformity, then I think once you accept that, you logically go to the next step, which is a chance to fix that nonconformity. That's all. Thank you, unless you have any questions.
Thank you.
Please rise. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned until further notice.